Gratitude for these teachings, also for each other in the Dharma, that we get to come back and touch in week after week. And that you're held by a whole group of teachers. Just, you're very lucky. There are so many people who don't have a weekly sangha to come to. So just taking a moment to drop into any gratitude that may be present around that. Appreciation. And really allowing mindfulness to take that in. What does gratitude actually feel like in the heart, mind, and the body? The Buddha really encouraged us to be aware and to know the wholesome. And a heart, mind, and a body that knows wholesomeness, contentment, ease, more readily gathers and collects, experiences varying degrees of samadhi, gatheredness, this collectedness, this being absorbed, one-pointedness. Ajahn Sumedho talks about it as the point that contains all things, all of our sense, six sense door experience. And that out of this gathered, collected quality of the heart mind, the state, there's enough steadiness to actually see how things are actually unfolding. And that can be turbulent sometimes for the heart mind. But once the heart mind starts to mature in relationship to them, there can be a real equanimity, steadiness, balance, the health that comes from that kind of inner balance and steadiness that is so intimate, so connected with life. Not indifferent. Ajahn Amaro talks about it, and I know you've all heard this before, and it's helpful to return to it as we return to the foundational practices that Barbara and Bill will be offering in their 5-week class. Ajahn Amaro says, rest in the natural peace and ease. Natural, organic, right? Rest in the natural peace and ease. That is the natural peace and ease of the heart and mind. And then he adds on, notice what disturbs that peace. Then notice what disturbs that peace. And that there's nothing wrong with that. Actually, it's a part of the practice. This is a practice instruction. Anticipated and expected that when we rest, when the practice actually uncovers for us this natural peace and ease of the heart, mind, and body, that conditions will disband that resulted in that peace and ease. And then we want to notice that, be aware of, like, oh, what is this? Agitation, discontent. Rest in the natural peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease of the heart mind. Then notice what disturbs that peace. So we've been cultivating when we sit meditative equanimity. So each time, a thought arises and we let it go. Each time we don't believe in that thought or engage with it or react to that thought, and we just return to the breath, or a simple object like the global sense of the body sitting, or the play of sensations in our hands, our feet. New one yogi for a whole month. They found the breath was problematic for them. Sounds was too ephemeral, but it was restful to just bring their attention to and bring mindfulness to the play of sensations in their hands. The temperature, coolness, and warmth. A tingling or pulsing, some of the involuntary movements that arise within the hand. Restful. So each time that we let go of thought and we just return to the breath, body, sounds, a very simple experience that teaches us to rest content with what's simple and calming. And there's a transmission that happens from the object to our heart and mind. The simple experience of the breath, soothing quality, the soothing quality of its rhythm, the alertness that can come with being with the changing nature of the breath, that gets communicated to the heart mind through mindfulness. And then the heart mind learns to be simple, learns to let go of complexity and entanglement with thought, fascination with future and the past, and commenting on the present moment, and all of our worries, all of our fantasizing. The mind starts to discover that it prefers simple, feels peaceful, restful to just be with the breath now. What's it like to return to that part of the body that helps you to stay connected to yourself while also being aware of hearing? Is that restful? If it's not, that's okay. And as we practice just returning to the breath, we're developing a meditative equanimity, letting go of entanglement, allowing the heart mind to just rest with what's simple, tranquil, calming, and teaching our heart mind that it's okay to be here. It's okay to be simple. It's okay to let go of complexity, that the world is not going to fall apart, that we don't need to figure it all out with this. What is that that Philip calls the head, the good old coconut? We don't have to figure it all out with the coconut. And each time we do this, we're cultivating a kind of equanimity, equanimity with the contact that we have at each of the six sense gates. And that doesn't mean that there isn't Vedana. Like, there is. The Buddha said there are six classes of Vedana. Vedana being this movement of pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant or unpleasant, neutral. And you hear six classes, or you hear six kinds of Vedana or feeling tone, and you think, God, really another list? But it's so simple. Just Vedana at the eye door, feeling tone at the eye door. The feeling tone that arises with sound or taste at the tongue door, or smell, or sensations of the body, or the heart mind, all of the thoughts and emotions and intentions that arise. There's some the heart feeling into the experience, moving into the experience and being, oh yeah, that's pleasant. Oh, that's unpleasant. Not neutral. That there can be equanimity with these contacts at each of the sense gates. Equanimity among the play of Vedana. There's this wonderful image in the suttas of likened to bubbles on the surface of a pond, the popping, popping, coming into being and just popping. Vedana is constantly shifting and changing, impermanent. At each of the six senses, it's a lot. lot to be human, to feel this amount of contact, to be sensitive to like the coolness of the hand, how that feels pleasant, but the ache in the neck that feels unpleasant, but suddenly neutral. And the ache ebbs into pleasant for just a moment, but then it's unpleasant again, or it's painful to be this sensitive and have equanimity at the center, knowing the experience, balance, letting go of reactivity and just resting, that that's possible for our human heart. Gil talks about it in this way, or he talks about his discovery of equanimity in this way. He talked about it as a powerful river of equanimity, a powerful strength that felt so harmonious. I love that he brings in the quality of harmony. You think of strength and harmony as perhaps being not being compatible with each other. That speaks to an intimacy, that equanimity, this powerful strength that felt so harmonious, so soothing, so settled, so healing. To feel the health of a mind that can see and not react. The health of a mind that is centered in itself in a deep way. The body that's centered in itself in a deep way. Doesn't lean forward, doesn't lean back, doesn't go for or against. You feel that centered. The implication is it's centered while still being in contact with this ebb and flow and vitality of being alive. Centered, but still so intimate. Not leaning forward, kind of collapsing around pleasant experiences, trying to reify them, trying to keep them. Not leaning back, not leaning away from the unpleasant or what we deem as unpleasant. Or negative, centered, allowing it all to move through. We know it. Equanimity is not indifferent. It's so alive. And as he says, it's soothing. I love all these S's that he brings in. A powerful strength that felt so harmonious, so soothing, so settled, so healing. To feel the health of a mind which can see, this is the intimacy, not only see but fully experience whatever's coming through the sixth senscape and not react. The health of a mind that is centered in itself in a deep way. The body that's centered in itself in a deep way and doesn't lean forward, doesn't lean back, doesn't go for or against. Equanimity, upekkha, tatramajjatatam. Upekkha, it's translated as equanimity. It has connotations of looking over, an understanding that comes from perspective. And perspective that lets us see, like, oh, this is how things have come to be. Or actually, it's we're seeing how things are coming to be, right? It's fluid, it's alive, not static. So there's a way in which we can be so caught up in the details of things and we lose balance, that we lose perspective. Like we're leaning and we're wrapping the heart around that which is pleasant and just wanting it. wanting it to stay because it just the fluidity is a little too much. So I'd like something to be stable. The equanimity is what's stable amid the changing fluid nature of the world that we live in our experience of the world. The stability that comes from perspective, getting an aerial view and eagle's perspective that circles high and starts to see the relationship among different parts of the land. That's actually learning how to read the land and terrain of our lives. I think I shared this with you the last time we were together. I had a relative who was having a really challenging time, and we're really close. So when she gets worried, I start to get really worried as well. Not only was she worried, her connection with the reality was quite tenuous. See my heart really starting to worry about her, getting really reactive. And there was this moment of previous practice where the mind started to pivot towards equanimity through starting to, what'd you describe it? A reflective investigation that ushered in some equanimity. And it was a reflective investigation around, well, what are the conditions that are giving rise to her and a tenuous connection with reality? And it was like, oh, she's working the graveyard shift. She's not getting enough sleep. Heart mind gets out of balance when that happens for her. She's experiencing hardships at work. She starts to feel isolated, doesn't ask for help. And you hear the pivot from an unwise attention that was resulting in all this proliferation about how she was doing it wrong, how is she to only do this or that. All this proliferation that's born of worry and fear and blaming. There was a pivot from that kind of attention to a more wise attention that was attending to the conditionality of phenomena. Like, what are the conditions that are giving rise to her unsteadiness in this moment? And I could see, like, not her fault. This is the way things are right now. And then there was the feeling of, how can I help? How can I help? So just starting. My system's starting to relax around how things actually are. And in that moment, I felt, started to feel some settling, a little peace, a little equanimity. Not leaning forward, and not, in this case, there was like a leaning. Actually, I was kind of pendulating between those two, like pushing it away and then leaning in to fix. And this pivoting from unwise attention to wise attention, a wise attention that could lead to an equanimity that comes from getting a wider perspective instead of being caught up in the proliferation of all the reactivity. Starting to get some perspective by seeing, like, oh, these are the conditions that are at play. I'm not able to see all of them. But just to invite in that reflection and the pivot that comes in towards equanimity through that reflection that gives perspective. It reminds me of this passage from Gill's Book of Eight, which is a collection of 16 poems. It's he's translated these poems from the Pali into English, and it's found in the Minor Discourses, the Khudaka Nikaya. I love this. He says, there is no sharp distinction between the means and the goal in the Book of Eight. So this goal of freedom, no sharp distinction between the freedom itself and the means by which we move towards that freedom. So the practices, the qualities that we cultivate are ones of freedom that move us toward freedom. So there is no sharp distinction between the means and the goal in the Book of Eight. That is, the personal qualities of someone who has attained the goal are the same qualities one is to cultivate when training for the goal. One trains by being what one is to become. One trains by being what one is to become. If the goal is to be peaceful, the way there is to be peaceful. If the goal is to be released from craving, the way there is to train to subdue their craving. In this way, the achievement of the goal is not radically distinct from what led to that achievement. In that way, the achievement of the goal is not radically different from what led to that achievement. One trains by being what one is to become. In our moments of reactivity, or when we see reactivity arising and we pivot through practicing those things that lead to our aspirations for practice, that lead to our aspirations for our life. In this moment with my relative, the pivot for me was turning toward and seeing the conditionality of, okay, what are the conditions at play here that may be giving rise to her tenuous connection to reality? Wide perspective. This wisdom that comes from getting an overview of the situation. And then when we get an overview, what gets ushered in is this Tatramajatapa. Such a mouthful, Tatramajatapa. Love saying Tatramajatapa, Tatramajatapa. It's standing in the middle of things, this Tatra quaking. Maja, middle. I don't know what tata means. But Tatramajatata, standing in the middle of things, in the middle of things, are these eight worldly winds. These eight worldly winds that we experience through each of the six sense gates. This gain and loss, praise and blame, collective admiration and collective discredit, joy and sorrow. And this standing in the middle of things, actually standing in the middle of it, not leaning around it or leaning away or losing our balance. That standing actually takes balance. It takes responsiveness. It takes intimacy with what's actually happening. So again, equanimity, not indifferent, not inured to the world. Oh, intimate. Balance. And then feeling into all of these conditions and saying, oh, these are the conditions that have come together that have resulted in this fluid influx outcome. And given these conditions, it couldn't have worked out any other way. And this helps us to relax our preferences. Equanimity helps us to be in touch with our preferences, but not insist that reality conform to our preferences, to our likes, to our wishes, to our wants. So there's this wonderful equanimity phrase that I just learned from Jill Shepherd, a teacher in our community. And she learned it from Kamala Masters, who knows where Kamala learned it from. And it's the phrase, things are like this. And it feels very similar to Ajahn Sumedho's, it's like this. But it's turned into an equanimity phrase. in the way that Kamala names it, articulates it. Things are like this because they are like this. And it's okay. Being in touch just in this moment. Noticing your response to the talk or your reaction to the talk, feeling your butt in your chair or your cushion. Noticing sights. Oh, things are like this because they are like this. And it's okay. Is it okay? Actually asking yourself the question, all right, in touch with things as they are, is it okay? No. It's like, okay, can I bring some balance and some equanimity around the fact that the heart is like, not okay. Softening around that, not okay. As Philip would say, comfortable with the discomfort. It's like this because it is like this and it's okay. Is it okay? Yeah, not feeling so well today, a little sick. I'm okay. I'm not pushing it away. I'm not wanting things to be different. I'm not in contention with how things are. Okay. It's like this because it is like this and it's okay. When reality doesn't meet our wishes or our preferences, the untrained heart and mind can react with anger or resentment or despair or grief, wanting to push things away or trying to fix. And the basic underlying movement in the heart is one of aversion there, right? And then when things do go our way, there can be elation or joy or exuberance. And the basic underlying movement there is one of greed. Equanimity is in touch with the full play, the full spectrum of life, and embraces some challenging truths of life, some difficult truths that the heart starts to mature and mature its relationship to, which is for ourselves, for the people that we love, for acquaintances, for people that we're having challenges with, like everybody, all beings, babies, dogs, ants, that we have painful experiences, pleasant experiences, neutral, and no one's exempt. Everybody experiences it. And yet, with equanimity, the heart is learning to be at ease, to rest, to be balance with these vicissitudes. Well, this is painful. It's like this because it is like this. Wow, it's okay. I didn't know I had this capacity or that the heart had this capacity. Well, it's pleasurable. But I'm not clinging to it and grasping to it, just letting it flow through. Okay. At rest. Oh, here's blame. Oh, here's praise. The heart's at rest. And we can struggle with this as a possibility for our heart. Because being at peace, this restfulness, this balance with life as it's flowing through us, can seem like we don't care, that we're indifferent, or that we just don't care about the world, especially when injustice is afoot. That to experience equanimity in relationship to what's happening in Ukraine means that we don't care. And that's one, that our outrage, yeah, that our outrage is commiserate with our depth of care. And that's one way. That's one way of being in the world. But there's another way. There's another way that we can still care, that Metta is still present. Compassion is fully firing. There's this vision of all of the beautiful qualities and celebrating that, like equanimity as the friendliness and the heart resting in this vision of freedom, celebrating the goodness and beauty of life. Still intimate. There's still this care, but the care and the compassion and the mudita is informed by the wisdom of equanimity that sees that our reactivity is just going to inflame an already painful, challenging, egregious, heart-wrenching situation. The peace is the result of non-reactivity, not an absence of caring, not an absence of love, not an absence of compassion and benevolence. Fully firing within equanimity. And when the heart isn't reactive, we can take action that doesn't intensify the pain of the situation or strangle the joy that's present because we've collapsed into craving, wanting. That when reactivity arises in our own hearts and minds, when a far enemy of equanimity is this reactivity, the reactivity of wanting, the reactivity of pushing things away, the aversion. And when we see that arising in our hearts, can we remember that at the center of the reactivity is usually some really innocent impulse wish for what's wholesome? We don't need to make an enemy of the reactivity when our hearts touch what's happening in Ukraine or what's happening in Yemen and Myanmar and Syria. We can see that at the center of our reactivity is some wish for all beings to be safe, a wish for an end to senseless violence, or a wish for our elected leaders to enact legislation that's for the benefit of everybody and not just a select few? Can we actually pivot towards that? Can we pivot toward the wish that's at the center of our reactivity? One of the proximate causes for the arising of equanimity. This next aspect of equanimity involves karma. And it's such a sensitive topic. I don't want to rush through it. And we don't have enough time to give it the fullness that it deserves. And kind of sitting with the truth of karma that rests at the center of equanimity and coming into a mature relationship with karma, this Pali word that's translated as action. But we'll just end here for now. And just to summarize, there are different types of equanimity. So we talked about a meditative equanimity that we cultivate in our meditation. That can be a support for off the cushion as we're in the kind of play of our lives. That there's a steadiness that can arise from this meditative equanimity that we've known, right? Help us to be steady with these different contacts that seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and sensations of the body that are painful or pleasant, that we can be balanced amid that because we've discovered our capacity for a balance that arises with meditative equanimity. There's a meditative equanimity. And then there's the equanimity of a Brahma Vihara. Equanimity as a Brahma Vihara. It's totally intimate and connected with life. Yeah. Again, need to move to comma, but there's not enough time. My hope is that when we come back, or when we come back together, we'll have a chance to explore this. Yeah, really feeling your own capacity to be with this wild play of sensations and contacts, and feeling your heart's own capacity for the steadiness, balance, and the perspective that can come from getting a aerial view of a situation, letting go of reactivity that allows us to see like, oh, these are the conditions that came together. I don't see all of them, but here are some of them. Not anybody's fault. Okay. How can I help? And then seeing the conditionality has resulted in this fluid outcome, there being some capacity to just stand in the middle of it all, this tatramajatata, quaking, the shaking, the eight worldly winds. You're feeling the winds, you're responding to them. Not the stony indifference. And that the steadiness and the balance comes from being in contact and relationship with the eight worldly winds. All that's quaking in the world, tatramajatata.